Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of E-Heroes for those keeping count. This is episode 369, and my next guest, we haven't seen her since episode 298, so it's been over a year, and we're going to talk about understanding humans. I know that you're probably thinking, well, that's a little crazy, but hear me out, listen. And I'm going to bring back Tantiana Sawyer, and we're just going to dive deep and see where it goes. So thanks for being here.
Absolutely, Rob. Thanks so much for having me back.
You know, in the last year, you said that you got your psychology degree, and that fascinates me because you're all about numbers. You're all about patterns, and you've helped your clients, you know, with their accounting for a long time. So, you know, why psychology today?
It's a specific, I guess, branch of psychology. It's called Gestalt therapy. It was actually founded in New York by a Jewish refugee from Europe, Fritz Perls. And unlike most of psychologists and therapists and social workers in the US who practice CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which basically looks at patterns and has a protocol for certain things. Once you have the diagnosis, Gestalt therapy is all about kind of verbalizing your emotions, understanding your emotions, being aware of your body's response to certain things, and how that kind of talks about how you feel about whatever it is that's happening, right? And why psychology? So I started this journey about 4 years ago at this point and finished it this year. But initially, I wanted to learn. It was fascinating to me. I wanted to learn more about it because I found that I caught myself this one day when, you know, I run my own business. I've been running my own business since 2012. I mean, I ran it before, but it was a different kind of business. So it was a bookkeeping business where since 2012, I started the tax and accounting kind of like a more full service business management firm. And, you know, with your own business, there's always a lot of uncertainty, especially when it comes to money, right? And so we are all in business for profit. Profit is the reward that we get for taking the risk, starting a business, and it's all about profit. How much you pay yourself should replace how much you would have to pay someone else. So your salary is not really profit. Mm. Your salary or whatever it is that you take as compensation would be paid to somebody else if they were to run your business. Profit is a reward for starting the business, for running the business, for taking the risk. And so financial side of things is always very important. And so when I was a kid, I remember that my dad would lose it many, many times. And he was in business for himself. He would come home and find some small, you know, reason to lose, and he would lose his, you know what, right? And until that one day when I was worried about the money, losing a client, not onboarding a client or whatever, early in the business, I caught myself losing it with my kids. I think it was my daughter at that time, based on some small stuff, like in a grand scheme of things, completely irrelevant, unimportant, and just something that wasn't worth the stress. Let's put it this way. And I remember at that moment, it was like I connected the dots. I figured out why my dad was doing that, because he was stressed out about the money all the time. You know, business in the 90s in the former Soviet Union was not easy. And so to me, it was like, you know what? I don't want my kids to be learning these patterns on my account, like, you know, because of me. And so I started on this journey. The first step or the first year was group therapy. And group therapy has a very important role where, you know, I learned to verbalize my feelings. Interestingly, we as humans, our emotions live in the amygdala, which is the most ancient part of the brain, right? But our speech lives in the neofrontal cortex, which is the more newer part of the brain. And so for most people, it's really hard to connect emotion to words, to express in words how you're feeling. So we as humans, we express these emotions in different ways. We scream, we get angry, we hold it all in. And the typical animal response, fight or flight, in psychology, it's actually fight, flight, or freeze. Fight, flee, or freeze, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of how humans respond as well to different emotions. And so the first thing I learned was verbalizing my emotions. And what I found was that I was completely out of touch with my emotions, my body. Like, I didn't hear any signals. You know, typical accountants, we are really good at neglecting our bodies for decades. When we care about the clients on the other side, kind of too much sometimes, right? And so that's what I discovered first in psychology. I kind of discovered myself a little bit. I finished this first phase, which was, again, group therapy. And I was like, you know what? I think I don't know enough yet. So I decided to continue. And as I've started the second part of the studies, what I found is there's a lot of connection in what I deal with every day at work. I work with business owners, but I've always said that business is personal. It's just with psychology, what I found is that it's much more than just personal, right? We never work with just a business owner. It's not just like business is business. It's never like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always personal. It always comes down to learned patterns, narcissism, maybe childhood trauma, or a combination of all of those things that affect how we behave in business, how we behave toward other people, whether we kind of choose to be intentional in things, whether we choose to take the higher road, you know, like we don't work with people who are just bad people, people who will cheat, maybe even small things, but who will cheat, who will beg, borrow, steal kind of thing, and who would diminish my staff, my team, or humiliate me in some way, or, you know, or just say things that are personal attacks or anything like that, which over the years has happened a number of times, and I no longer work with any of those clients.
And I've fired a few people like that, clients who demeaned my workforce, my vendors, my contractors. And, you know, it was, and I'm not saying that they did it on purpose, but they did it in such a way that they wanted everything to be about them.
Mm-hmm.
And when it wasn't about them, they turned on us. And I'm like, this is so disrespectful. It's not even worth the money. And I fired them, and they were completely blindsided. I'm like, well, you brought it on yourself. This is the words that you said. They're like, oh, that's not what we meant. Like, I don't care. It's too late.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes, you know, as an entrepreneur, we have to take back our lives. We created this business to basically fund our personal life, to create freedom.
Absolutely.
But we've become slave to a business that we've created. And in doing so, we're always accepting that carrot that someone puts out in front of us, in hopes that it's going to turn into something bigger. And I keep telling people, look, you can't go in with a low price and expect them they're going to continue to use your service, because they don't value you. You know, they'll use your cheap service and then go somewhere else. You know, go in there with a high price, command authority. People are afraid to do it.
Yeah, accountants are the worst at that stuff.
Well, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning that net profit. And I've been seeing this a lot, especially on the internet, where people will talk about their gross sales. You can talk about your gross sales all day long, but until I see your net results, it doesn't mean crap. You know, you could have made $500,000 in gross sales, but by the end of the day, if you're making less than the guy flipping burgers at McDonald's, you might as well just go work at McDonald's and forget all the stress.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, granted, I would rather work 12 hours in my own business and 8 hours in somebody else's, but you still, at the end of the day, you need to make money.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, when people come to me, Rob, it's just a small job. Yeah. You know, my minimum, and I throw out my minimum, and they'll say, well, that's ridiculous. That's more than a lawyer. Take it or leave it. You got more work for me to do? I can probably put it in with that minimum. Nope, they went somewhere else. That's and then cool. They get it so cheap, they call me back. They screwed it up. Can you fix it? Yeah, but now my minimum is double because now I have to fix their shit. And then they call me an asshole. So yeah. That's the abuse that entrepreneurs need to take. And I get your point. You know, I have a lot of clients where, do I want to be nice to them? Do I want to be the asshole that just, you know, ruins their day? Because, you know, typically I deal with the business owner. A lot of times the business owner then's on vacation, dealing with family issues, then I got to deal with the secretary who has no idea, but they expect me to fix it without even knowing the full picture.
Yeah.
You know, and there's days where I'm like, can I just talk to Tom? I'm probably one of those textbook people that you analyze in your classes and make fun at your group therapy. But as a 30-year entrepreneur, I got some stories.
Awesome. You know, my biggest thing is I love when entrepreneurs get to a point where they can learn from other people's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Most entrepreneurs learn from their own mistakes, and often those mistakes are very costly. And so in my work, I often have to remind them that, you know, you have the choice to learn from your own mistake. But I will tell you, having done this for 20 years, that there are better ways to do it.
Yeah. And you know, producing over 60 books in 12 years, there's a lot of mistakes to learn from those books.
Exactly.
You know, but it's that just gets me. You know, everybody brags about how much they're making on the internet. Yeah, it's in gross sales, people. You know, I want to see your net numbers.
Yeah.
But they're afraid to because they know they tell a different story.
Yeah, the reality is that, you know, people think, and I don't know where entrepreneurs have learned that, to brag about top line revenue. Oh, we're $1 million business. Yeah, but my first question is, how much is your bottom line?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's, like, I would much more respect somebody who makes gross $500,000 and keeps $300,000 net than somebody who grosses $3 million and keeps $300,000 net.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Sometimes I look at people and say, well, I'm sorry that you took a loss this year, but look at all the good years you had. Did you save any money? No. What? Yeah. And that's the thing that I struggle with when I had a cleaning business long ago is that, you know, when you start a business, you forget that some of that money needs to be set aside for your retirement, for machinery, for whatever, not just paying your bills. And so you go through it for, you know, 1 or 2 years and you're like, well, I need to replace my computer or this or that. There's no money because you spent it all. You didn't save any, nor did you put away any money for taxes. And
Uncle Sam always knocks.
And then at the end of the year, you're going, why do I have such a huge tax bill?
Yeah.
Because you didn't do things right. And, you know, I think you're doing it the right way. I mean, you're not only understanding the human psychology, you're understanding the client psychology, because now you take everything that you've learned in the classroom, everything that you've experienced in the household, and you're analyzing your clients, not only to understand their numbers better, but to see patterns, not only in the way they spend, but the way they think. And if you know how they're thinking, then you can adjust and say, look, typically this is how you thought about X subject.
Yeah.
You know, going forward, let's do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, or when the CEO gets replaced, new CEO steps in, he has no idea. You can come back and say, look, this was the thinking of what we're doing. Do you want to continue that, or do you want to create your own patterns going forward?
Yeah. And what's interesting is that, you know, what we were talking about and with the sometimes see if a CEO gets fired and a new person steps in, I think a really big problem that I've noticed more in the last 5 to 10 years is that it's all about the ego. A lot of it is about the ego. An old CEO typically doesn't have a clue that they're about to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different story. The new CEO in cases like these typically comes in and wants to prove themselves to show I'm a good person. I'm a really good CEO. I'm a really good whatever. And they start implementing all kinds of changes without really looking and say, you know, have you ever like seen this movie SWAT? With Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
And it's like that with firefighters, with police officers, with military. Whenever there is some sort of an emergency going on, they never run. First they observe and take notice of what's going on in the background, on the sidelines. What's happening to assess the situation first, right? And because there's no ego involved in that. When, you know, somebody who's starting a business or stepping into the new role, many, and I would say vast majority, and this is my experience, my kind of how I pay attention and I notice, right? They're all trying to prove themselves and to show how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. It's about the business. It's about what's best for the business. And what's best is for you to assess the situation, to fully understand what the main business model is, what's going on, and what needs to be fixed, if anything.
Yeah.
Nobody's playing the long game.
Well, and let's talk about the long game, because for me, the long game has always been about legacy. And when you understand what the legacy is of a business, the CEO that whether he's vacating or coming in, needs to be able to understand that legacy. And so the things that he does can't be about him, can't be about his ego. It has to be about the legacy of that business going forward. You know, is what I'm going to do today to implement going to make this business last longer? Or am I just doing it for my ego that in 2 years we can sell the business and I'll make money?
Yeah.
You know?
And prove that I'm a good person and I'm a good boy or a good girl.
Yeah. You know, and I love using Disney as an example, because when it was the Michael Eisner era, he came in and retrofitted a lot of the parks and made them better and built resorts and done this and done some incredible things. And then he was replaced by Iger. Iger had the same vision as Disney. He came in and started buying up companies, Pixar and Star Wars and Marvel, and so he enhanced the legacy of Disney. But then there was that COVID, you know, Bob Chapek came in and he was just a money's guy. He wanted to understand how can we cut things, how can we do, and he was replaced very quickly, and they brought Iger back because they wanted that legacy, you know. And I'm not saying that Chapek wasn't handed a bad deal. He probably was. But COVID changed a lot of things to a lot of businesses. And I think a lot of them panicked because there was no sales. There was nothing coming in. Some stood their ground. Some paid their employees. But very few stuck to their legacy plan.
Yeah. Legacy is a big thing. For me, it's about, you know, when we don't work with just like a one-time tax return or something kind of deal, right? We work with a family, typically. We love working with families because usually when we do, people have the right values and they align with my values. Mm-hmm. And that's family, doing the right thing, even if when no one else is watching. Mm-hmm. It's about building that legacy and building a better business, a business that changes people's lives. And it could be something simple, like a pharmacy business, but it still changes people's lives because people have access to things. Let's say it's a compounding pharmacy, and they have access to things that makes them feel really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful thing. It's still a life-changing business, even though it's as simple as a pharmacy.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed when I was over in Europe last year is a lot of the homes have been passed down from generation to generation to generation. It could go, you know, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
You come to America, and the average homeowner is in their home, what, 2-3 years, and they move again.
I think it's 4 or 5 on average.
Yeah, and it's terrible because we don't have that generational thinking.
Yeah.
When it comes to real estate. That the Europeans do.
I have a theory on that, actually. And it may be, I have a theory because I grew up in, you know, in the former Soviet Union. I was born in the Soviet Union, grew up in both the Soviet Union and former Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's interesting. And I think a lot about different things and psychology helps with that. But I don't know if there is a causal effect, but it's my theory that there is one.
Mm-hmm.
In the former Soviet Union, in many countries in Europe, it's similar, maybe not as much, but similar. There is a maternity leave that's 3 years long. And we're not talking huge money there, right? Nobody's going to be paying you. If you're making $100,000, nobody's going to be paying you $100,000 to sit home. But,
mm-hmm.
It's government funded.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 years old is about the age where a child becomes a little bit more mature. I know that I've tried both of my kids to put them in like at least a couple of days a week daycare at 2, 2.5. And frankly, they were not ready at all. It was terrible. And so I took them out one after the other. Like I've tried it with one and I was like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's fine. So I was working, you know, during nap times in the evenings and stuff like that on my business. And at 3, the adaptation was much faster. Because at 3, yes, they're still crying in the daycare, but when mommy leaves, but it's different. It goes away much quicker because they're much more mature and ready for that. So in the Soviet Union, moms legit stay home for 3 years legally.
Mm-hmm.
Moms, rarely dads, but mostly moms. For women, it's a sense of pride, right, to have children and to raise them and stuff like that. Is it easy? No. But is it something that you have to do if you care? Mm-hmm. Yes. And in the former Soviet Union, it's very uncommon to put your parent in the nursing home. Like it never happens almost. Parents die in our homes. My dad died in my home. My husband's dad died in his home, in their home. We look after our, and we might get some help, you know, like some potentially medical help, some maybe nurse, but I don't know, whatever, right? But it's always in our home.
Mm-hmm.
In America, it's 6 weeks, you're back to work and some stranger is watching your kid. And then nobody even blinks an eye to put their parent in a nursing home. That's just my theory. That there is a connection, that a connection is needed in childhood, a much stronger connection in parenting. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But that is also has to do with legacy, with generational stuff. I have a new client who was screwed over by dad's accountant, toxic relationships all around. Tax was screwed up. Accounting was screwed up, never really done. And I almost teared up when we were talking, him and I were talking, and he said, you know, my son came back, transferred back to local college because he wants to help me with the business. My older son graduated and he wants to do this and I'm helping him out. And he goes, I want to make sure. And I was like, okay, so what are you looking to do? Are you looking to bring on the sons as part owners? Or he was like, I want to set up so that they work for their success, but also that I help them with it. But at the same time, I don't want to just hand them over everything, but they are the most important people in my life. They're even more important than I am. I love those kids so much. And I almost teared up when, you know, when a guy says that, it's rare, right? Like my husband's like that to our kids. And I know a very few men who are like that. Generally women are like that, right? Because we're nurturing, whatever, blah, 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 whatever we're supposed to do. But I almost teared up because of how this adult dude is talking about his adult children and looking into the future and kind of building the business today so that tomorrow, when it's time, his kids take over and run it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that we need to have more people, even like yourself, thinking about, you know, generational wealth, passing the business from one owner to the next, because it is important, you know, and just like the values that you learn in Europe, I think they need to come to America, because I think lately that, maybe it's not lately, maybe it's been a long time, because my grandfather was like this in the 50s, very Vulcan-like, you know, no emotion. But he had emotion when he got home, you know. I try to be, you know, the same emotion throughout the day, because it's the news is depressing, you know, and you start looking at that and thinking, oh shit, I need to shut down the business, or I need to do this, or I need to, and you don't even look about the lives of the people that are working at you.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, or you think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to cut some costs. So instead of giving you, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks of maternity, I'll give you 3 weeks, and, you know, you don't come back, then you're fired.
Yeah.
What kind of BS mentality is that?
It all comes back to values, you know, like what I said before, like I love clients who have families and whose number one value is their own health and their family's well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm that way, you know. It took me years to get to this point to understand that my health is a priority. Because if my health is not there, that's it, game over.
Yeah, you know. And as we get older, and you know, I just turned 56, and my dad is 80 years old. But you know, he had some health issues over the summer, and then had a stroke, and I'm like, how will that be for me? You know. Will I ever retire? You know, as an entrepreneur, probably not, because it's just ingrained in me that I'm going to work until I fade away. But, you know, as entrepreneurs, again, it goes back to that freedom that we have, that we can create schedules, that we can take care of our elderly. We can take care of our family. We can take care of our grandkids.
Yeah.
I think most people don't think about that. Yeah. They create a business and going, hey, look at this, I'm making X amount of dollars. Okay, yeah. But you know, if you just worked a job, you probably would have made money and a pension and benefits and all. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They become, so, you know, entrepreneurship isn't easy, but I think if people took more insight in what they have to do to be an entrepreneur, they probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I agree. It takes intention, it takes courage, I think. And most people, like Michael Gerber says, right, are technicians who just get the same job that they left. So mm-hmm. There's no freedom.
Well, and that's, you know, when I first, back in 1995, when I created my carpet cleaning business, I had left the carpet cleaning company. So I knew how to do things. You know, I just didn't understand marketing. I didn't understand, you know, a lot of things. And it took me years to learn it. And it took me, you know, then I was on the brink of going bankrupt, and I thought, I got one more shot. I'm going to go out to Arizona. I'm going to learn from marketers like Dan Kennedy and Joe Polish and some of these, and things turned around. I had the foresight to, and the understanding that I needed help. This is where I went. I got it. I learned marketing, like, you know, and I'm glad I did, because then I started on Spock Media in 2001. Next year, it'll be 25 years old.
Nice.
You know, but I sold the cleaning business in 2014 after 19 years.
Wow.
You know, I overlapped the businesses many, many years. But here's the thing is that had I not sought help, that business would have been gone long ago. I wouldn't be doing what I do now. You know, I had to drop my ego. I had to ask for help.
That's bingo. You know, like that's where most entrepreneurs fail, is that they fail to recognize that they need help.
Mm-hmm.
Accountants, because it's an industry such a close industry to me, accountants are some of the worst at it. I launched a program a couple of years ago to train bookkeepers, EAs, and CPAs to offer a fractional CFO service to their clients. And I've had a number of like interview calls, if you will, Q&A, like people asking what the program is about, how is it structured, how is this, how is that. And we got our first cohort, and it was about 10 people, I think. And I think it was only one CPA. Everybody else was either unlicensed or an EA who were motivated to grow and learn and do other things. But over the course of the interviews, I found like CPAs were like, oh, we already do that. Oh, we already offered that service. I'm like, really? How are you selling it? How are you delivering it? What's the process? Do you have a process? Are you actually becoming that financial springboard for your clients?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah. And then I put together this program with sort of like an acquaintance. He is he does turn around small business loans for himself. He was made his career and money in banking. He was a chief investment officer and chief loan officer at a fairly large bank, financial institution for, I don't know, 20 years. So he was the underwriter, basically, lead underwriter and lead investor. So very smart guy. We met at an event and he said, you know what's interesting? He said, 50% somehow businesses in trouble find me.
Mm-hmm.
He does funding up to, I think, $700 to $1 million, like up to. So sometimes it's 200, sometimes it's 150, you know, whatever. But he said, what's interesting is that in 50% of the cases of people coming to me because they're in trouble, they have a fractional CFO. And I'm like, I bet you it's their CPA.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the people who think they know everything. Don't want to learn, which is something I've always invested in myself. I will always learn new things. Psychology was one of them. Always learn something new, right? But that's a good example, right? People think that they know it all, and many of them fail because even with the magic bullet of a fractional CFO on their team.
Well, you know, and it reminds me of a story. When I had my cleaning service, one of my clients, we had as a client for about 10 years, and they brought in, I guess their accountant wanted to retire. They brought someone in. He was an extreme numbers guy. He loved to cut stuff. We were the first one that they cut. And I said, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to hire another cleaning service? Oh, no. We're going to have our own team of people that are on a sales floor do their own cleaning. All right, tell me how that's going to work out. Within 3 weeks, we were brought back because nobody wanted to clean and it was getting really filthy. And I doubled my price. I said, don't ever insult me like this again. And after about 6 months, he would take forever to pay us just because he was just adamant that he didn't like us. And so it was going from, you know, every month pay. And then he'd slow down at 60 days and 90 days. He goes, well, this is how I pay people. I said, you're fired. And I was done. And probably about 6 months later, he was fired too. So, yeah. It's, you know, I love, you know, that my uncle's an accountant. He became very rich doing what he does. And I admire that. But I also think there's, and we, you know, this is what the whole episode is about, is understanding humans. You have to understand the human behind the business and not just, you know, I'm going to help them cut costs, because that's not always what it is.
Honestly, even after COVID, I think the landscape has changed so much that, like, I tell people, I'm a part of this coaching group where we have kind of software that has some videos and trainings and strategies to grow profit, right? It's kind of like, you know, props. Mm-hmm. And one of the bigger areas is cutting costs. And that's one of the ones that I disagree with, because it's not about cutting costs at all, because often, you know, inflation, tariffs, and all of these other things, they affect the costs. Sometimes there's nothing you can do. You're not the Walmart of the world. You right. can't drive people out of business by just telling them to just cut costs for no reason. And I am against cutting costs blindly and cutting services and doing this stuff that company did that you said, but I am for improving efficiency and removing redundancies, mm-hmm. right? There are, in the age of AI, there are so many things that can be automated or accelerated mm-hmm. that would have someone maybe spend less time. I'll give you an example. So in my firm, we use most of our clients are in QuickBooks Online for a reason. And we use a tool that's a Google Chrome extension, and it's a software plugin that's called Write Tool. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Write Tool, for example, it costs whatever, 60, 80 bucks a month, whatever that is. But it allows functions in QuickBooks that are not otherwise available. Mm-hmm. And what it does, it allows us to make edits in bulk, make changes, make deletions, additions in bulk, and other things that, again, would take a few more clicks. And when you're working on, you know, 4,000 transactions, a few more clicks is for a few more thousand clicks. Mm-hmm. And so I made it a policy that everyone working with me would have to get comfortable and use this tool. If you don't use this tool, I'm not going to pay you for your hours, because you're going to be spending a lot more hours. I'm sorry. But you have to find a way to do this more efficiently. I don't want you to work overtime. I don't want you to work on the weekends. You have to be efficient at your work. So you have to use the tool. And technology is a wonderful solution for many things and processes that are out there for many businesses. Not everyone, of course, but many businesses. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But that's something that's not a cutting cost. It's an additional cost. But it, overall, in the, you know, big picture, it's solving the problem. I have a client who's a plumbing company in California. They found that because of their timesheet system, they have to have employees come in once a month to the office and spend 2 hours doing something, printing out, signing timesheets, I don't know, whatever, something, because of the California law. And California laws is a whole different, like, there should be an episode on California labor laws, but that's a different story. Anyway, so we counted, you know, their plumbers on average, let's say I'm making it up, 50 bucks an hour on average. Mm-hmm. They have 20 plumbers, right? If every plumber spends 2 hours a month at $50 an hour, that's 100 bucks times 20 plumbers. Mm-hmm. That's, 20 times 100, 2,000?
2,000, mm-hmm.
I think we calculated something like 5,000 or whatever it was per month. That's $60,000 wow. a year. So after we had that awareness, that aha moment on a call with a client, he went back to the system, like the software that they use for pricing, estimates, and timesheets, and was like, listen, you got to fix this stuff, because I want my $60,000 back.
Yeah, I mean, $60,000 is enough to hire another person.
Exactly.
You know, or buy, you know, another truck or whatever. But it just, you know, it's crazy. You know, timesheets don't have to be that complicated. Although California makes everything complicated.
Exactly. But a company like that, and it's just one example, right? It's $60,000 here, like that's technically cutting costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not cutting costs. It's not going back to your vendor and saying, I need this cheaper. It doesn't work like that. It no longer works like that. It used to, but it no longer works like that.
No. And it's, and I try not to ask anybody for something cheaper because I respect, you know, their knowledge, their experience. And, you know, I do have a lot of contractors in Canada. You know, the Canadian dollar is a little less than American dollars, but I still pay them in American dollars. You know, I respect them. I want them to make money, you know, and it's not, you know, and a lot of people, oh, Rob, what, you could go to Philippines and get a VA for $5 an hour. Okay, maybe. But I like the people I hire, and I'd rather give them the money that instead of just giving it willy-nilly to somebody I don't know.
I agree.
You know, and I'm just a big believer in you know, the people that I've met over the internet, even Facebook, you, everybody, you know, that I know, even on everybody that's been on eHeroes. You know, if someone comes and say, Rob, I need so-and-so person. I know where to find them and I will send them to them. And I don't want a referral. I don't want a referral bonus.
Yeah.
I know people are big in giving that. I'm like, look, if you want to give a referral bonus, then give it to a charity that actually needs it. I don't need it.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people out there like, all right, you can make thousands. And doing, you know, how much, that's just a pain in the ass to my accounting. So I don't. No, just
I agree.
$20 or $30 or
yeah.
And this is what I try to emphasize this to everybody. And we're going back to the minimum service fee. If your minimum service fee is $750, stick to it. Don't say, well, Rob, I'm hungry this week and I haven't been paid and someone will do this job for $100. You know what? The cheaper the client, the more hassles involved.
Absolutely.
Try to do that cheap job and it's going to cost you three times as much effort and it's not going to turn out the way you think. So stick to your guns and keep that minimum service fee.
Yeah. 100%. Accountants need to hear that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know that we go back to numbers and that's, you know, but to me it's, I would rather lose work, sit on my couch and not have to deal with PETAs, pain in the asses.
Yeah.
If I'm not getting my minimum service fee.
I absolutely agree. I'm the same way.
You know, so, yeah, you know, I think it takes time as an entrepreneur to learn these things, to understand not only human psychology, but the way accountants think too, because they're all about numbers and patterns. And although some people are better than others, like yourself. You know, and I think it's wise that we study, you know, psychology, because we have to have a better understanding of not only ourselves as entrepreneurs, but what we want out of our business. You know, is it legacy or is it just ego or is it, you know, is it just the numbers or do you want to build something? You know, you want to have enough money left over to take a vacation. You know, but I think people forget all that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we're in these, not saying that we're in a recession. I think there's businesses that are still making plenty of money.
Absolutely.
But I think the notion of a recession scares people. So they cut back and they keep cutting back and then they don't market themselves. And then they wonder why they can only afford peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch. So, you know, any last words of wisdom that you want to impart?
There's so many. Oh, my God. So my book that's probably going to come out either late next year or 2027 is called You're the Boss, Act Like One. And it's about a call to greatness. It's about how to build a business while building your life and get the freedom, time and money freedom that you really want. And so if this is something interesting for your listener, maybe somebody recognizes themselves, maybe they feel stuck, maybe they feel discouraged, maybe they've tried all the methods and everything. Maybe we should talk. I'm interviewing people for case studies for the book, and so it'd be very interesting for me to talk to people who are in that position, who are the ideal readers for my book. So in terms of wisdom, I would say have the courage to make the hard decisions. I think so very few entrepreneurs have the courage to make hard decisions. It's too bad. Sometimes the business is not shut down on time, and then it drags out and really costs you much more money. Sometimes that you don't make the right decision and you don't pivot so much that you'll make a ton of money. And sometimes it's just you're just repeating the same thing and expecting a different result.
Or, you know, they gravitate to the shiny object thinking that's going to help save them.
Yeah.
It's going to cost them more money.
Yeah.
So how do people find you? Where do they go?
I think the best one is Instagram and YouTube. Tatiana Sawyer on Instagram, and my YouTube channel, Talks to Tatiana. I think that's the best. And you can always message me through Insta or any other social media, and I'll respond. So
there you go. So we'll see everybody on the next episode, but go find Tatiana and listen. And when her book comes out, buy a couple copies, because you want to give it to all your entrepreneur friends. And you know, if they're not going to read it, at least you can slap them upside the head with it. Give them some knowledge. So, we'll talk to everybody later. Adios.